Remember the simpler times of the 90s? The bygone days of Beanie Babies, affordable homes, and an endless stream of John Grisham books being turned into blockbusters? Hey, remember Blockbuster? Whether you're looking for a hit of nostalgia, a laugh, or just learning about some of the behind-the-scenes insanity of working in a porn shop the day before Christmas, you have to check out the Talkbuster podcast. An awesome podcast where every episode, Chris Chipman sits down with a guest to talk about the good and the bad of those bygone days.
Hello and welcome to Geeks with Shields, your home for all things good and nerdy in this, the darkest timeline. I'm Axel Wright, and with me as always is...
You know, I kind of want to write you a Walter Cronkite opening, but I don't know what that would be.
I'll read it. I'll totally do it if you write it.
No, I got to think of something clever. Like, today in the darkest timeline, I'm joined by a special guest.
Yeah, I would totally do
there
that.
There we go. Perfect.
Something like that. Anyway.
Let's do that. Crip, scrap this. Roll it back to the top. Let's do that.
Not today. Late another time. Anyway.
All right, fine. I'm keeping this all in because that's good stuff.
All right. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I am drinking mead, which gets better the more of it I drink. Funny how that works with alcohol.
True. Except for tequila. That doesn't work.
Oh, fuck.
My memory goes away with tequila.
People as white as us should never drink tequila.
Yeah, it's...
Just a given. We were not meant to drink that.
It is not the quenchiest.
it's like cultures that didn't have dairy. They're all inherently lactose intolerant. White people, we are tequila intolerant.
True. I think I've said it on recording before, but I've only ever blacked out from drinking twice. One of them was just from trying to keep up with my friend who weighed more than twice as much as me. And the other time was at my buddy Doug's bachelor party, and we were bar hopping. And I was doing just fine. I was having like one drink per bar. And then we got to the third or fourth bar, and his buddy from the East Coast came in, yelled tequila shots, and I remember nothing after that.
Yeah, nothing good ever happens. Okay, good things do happen after tequila. But I am legally obliged to tell you that nothing good happens after tequila shots.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, things are fine on my side. Oh, I was going to bring up so that I can have on this recording that home insurance is a fucking racket.
Dude, insurance in general is a fucking... Do not get me started on that rant. I will go on forever.
I got to rant a little bit here, though, man. So I'm not going to go into all the details. I'm going to go into some details. My home insurance canceled on me. Or I shouldn't say canceled. They chose not to renew me. A couple days back.
And
the reason is because I had 3 claims in 3 years. I get it, but admittedly, they were very, like, one claim was big, one claim was medium, and the last claim was tiny. Like, they didn't even, when they sent me the letter of reasons why they're letting me go, they didn't even include the third claim, so I don't even bother.
Oh, no, you're using the thing you pay for. We can't have that.
Yeah, so they dropped me, so I spent the last month trying to find new insurance. I finally got a new one. I only got 2 quotes and a bunch of denials, right? And so I finally got the new one going today. To give you a frame of reference, my premium before was $668 a year. My new premium is $2,030. So I tripled my premium.
Fuck, that hurts.
And my coverage went down by less than half. I went from being covered up to $430,000 to being covered up to $170,000.
See, folks, you really don't want to own your own home. It's not worth the hassle.
Yeah. So, for the record, home insurance specifically is fucking bullshit. Now, I will say that a friend of mine told me a different perspective to look at it from, which is to figure out how much that my previous insurance has paid out to me, and then figure out how much I've put in and where I am. And when I did that, and I did the math, I am quite... in the positive. So arguably I am several tens of thousands in the positive from where I would be if I didn't have insurance at all. That is fair.
I did something similar with my back in how much they've spent trying to fix me versus how long I've been hurt. Mm-hmm. And it didn't make me feel any better.
Yeah, well, this one made me feel a little better.
Yeah, like, no, the fuckers have spent thousands fucking me over.
Yeah, and if you figure out the math between those numbers I said, my mortgage payment is going to go up by about $115 a month to account for the new insurance.
Yeesh.
Anyway, that's what most of my day-to-day was filled with dealing with. So that's where I am.
God, that sucks.
Yeah. Anyway, we can end that rant now. I just wanted to get it on record, my thoughts about home insurance, now that I've been dealing with this.
It's a fucking scam.
Yeah, totally scam.
All insurance is a scam.
And if I didn't get insurance, then my mortgage company would force buy insurance, and it would be way more expensive. I got two quotes, by the way. Two quotes total. The quote that I just told you was the better one, because the other quote I got was over $4,000 a year in premium, with an extra caveat that they just would not cover water damage at all.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah, I didn't go with that one.
Really? I'm shocked.
Yeah. Anyway, on to something positive, now that I got that off my chest, which is naming our illustrious legion, those Patreon, just patrons. I was trying to think of the word like benefactor or something like that. But yeah,
our benefactors also works. Patron is more tied to the history of art.
Fair. All right, our patrons, those people who are actually, you know, give us some money to do what we do every month, and we then have the privilege of getting to say their names on recording every recording. I think there's only like small thing. Whatever. Point is, here's the list in front of me. It is. Pam Galley, Marquis, Chris Chitman, River Galley, Krug, Arthur Crane, Kevin Vey, Brendan Agnew, John Vinnels, Kit Kenny, Seth Decker, Donald Lucy, Patrick Anderson, Carson Amell, Scott Rubin, Derek Takade, and Peter Cook. Now, if you would like to join the Illustrious Legion, you can go right over to patreon.com/geekswithshields. $1 a month will get you added to the Illustrious Legion, 25 cents an episode. But Patreon will take most of that from us, so if you go up to like $5, you get to overcome the weird, like, cut that Patreon takes, but no pressure. Do whatever you want. You know, we're just glad to have you here.
Yep.
Anyway, as the MC of this buckler, even though this was Ulrich's idea and last time I let him say it, I actually have him, he like wrote it out for me. So today, in this buckler, we are discussing I want better blank movies. And the particular fill-in, the blank for this time, our Mad Libs, is war movies. And when Ulrich said this to me, I was like, all right, I know you got a lot to say about that, so let's do that one.
Yeah, no, this is an idea that kind of came to me because, one, I want better blank movies. We can plug and play any number of genres. We can come back to this, provided this is successful. But it also just kind of lets us have a personal episode. Like, I really love blank genre, and I wish we had better versions of blank genre.
And in particular, I feel like it would be interesting to go back with some analytics and figure out like what the percent of me talking versus you talking is. I think in general I'm a lot more stupidly verbose. Like, it's not always good words. I spout nonsense more than you, I think. So I thought that since war movies are not really my bag, with a few exceptions, I thought this was a good excuse to let Ulrich kind of talk about something he wants to talk about.
Oh, bullshit when you say they're not your bag, because right out the gate, I think they're everyone's bag. It's how they're presented.
Oh, yeah, sure. Like, well, that's why I said, when I mean they're not my bag, I just mean that I don't seek them out. There are a handful of movies about war that I like, and I do have my preferences when it comes to movies that focus on that, but I feel like you have a more predominant taste for them than I do.
In certain circles, my nickname is War.
True. For a long time, and still sometimes, when Ulrich and I, after recording, when we're getting off call, I'll say peace, because, you know, I grew up in an area that says that, and then he would just go, war, and then end call.
Yep. So, front load the baggage here. Yes, I understand on a deeply fundamental level that war is one of the worst things humans can experience. It is terrible. It is destructive. I recognize there are two fucking horrible ones going on right now, one being the war in the Ukraine, the other being the genocide happening between Israel and Palestine. Yes, it's a fucking genocide. I'm not gonna shy away from that one.
I will say that the current interaction between Israel and Hamas, I think, is far, far, far outside of the scope of what you or I are qualified to talk about.
I'm not going to touch on it any more than the people that identify war crimes are going, you're fucking committing war crimes. Stop.
Oh, fun thing about that, though. So, again, I am out of the loop. Don't take anything I say about the actual conflict as gospel. Go research it yourself. But I did read that Hamas was holding up in hospitals, and that was why Israel had, like, attacked a hospital or something, because Hamas is basically using civilians as human shields. And recently, I was watching a video that was talking about a video game, Total War, that, you know, Orc and I are fans of. And the name of the video was something like Breaking the Geneva Convention, because it was talking about using Skaven warp bombs.
Oh.
And so I was like, wait a minute, I hear about the Geneva Convention my whole life. What actually is it? And so then I went and like looked it up and just watched those summaries. The Geneva Convention has fucking nothing to do with chemical weapons. That's the Geneva Protocol of 1925. But the Geneva Conventions, like all like six of them, have everything to do with the treatment of civilians in war. And one of them specifically is not targeting hospitals.
Yeah, no, very basic thing. Like, you cannot pose as medical staff or a hospital. You cannot bomb hospitals. Anyways, off topic.
Yeah.
We have said it, we've addressed it, we understand. But Lizard Brain loves violence.
I feel like Lizard Brain is Oryx's motto for the night.
I'm sorry, I love Lizard Brain as shorthand for the most basic fundamental thought process of our brains.
Didn't Carlin have a whole bit about the...
I was going to say, Carlin's got a great joke about why feeding comes before fucking, because you can't fuck without fuel. This is the very example that Lizard Brain trumps Monkey Brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he talks, he's got Man Brain, Ape Brain, and Lizard Brain, I think is like what he called it.
And he has a whole great tangent with the different thought processes and priorities of it. And, you know, Monkey Brain and Man Brain agree, oh, fucking's good, fucking's real good. Lizard Brain's like, but I prefer feeding. Why? Because you can't fuck if you don't feed.
I gotta go look up that. I can do, like, George Carlin's Back in Town special, like, back to front, no problem. But I barely remember this bit, so I'm gonna have to look it up after this.
Yeah, also look up his flamethrower one. That one always made me laugh.
I love the flamethrower one. I say that one, like, a couple, you know, once a month or so, I'll just repeat that to somebody.
What if I wanted to throw flames over there?
Well, it's the tone. He goes, man, I really want to set those people on fire over there, but I'm way too far away to do it. If only I could throw flame onto them. And the idea would have died there, except he set it right next to his friend who was good with tools.
Other side tangent. Part of the reason what makes George Carlin so fucking funny is his delivery.
Yeah.
Generally understood how to word the jokes so that they just come off real great.
Like that bit right there, I didn't do it nearly the justice that it should, but when he says in the special, good with tools, the way he delivers that word, I fucking die.
That's why Prime Carlin is great, is because, again, this calm, matter-of-fact delivery. It's just, these are the thoughts coming out of his head. It's very melodic.
Anyway, so, before we get into, you know, you want better war movies, then we have to go into, okay, well, what is the problem with war movies then?
Well, war movies come in one of two flavors. Historical war as hell movies, like All's Quiet on the Western Front, Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan, that really go, yeah, no, this carnage is terrible and horrible, and we should never, ever fucking do this again. Look at how horrible and terrible this is.
Okay, and?
And, boy, it sure is fun to blow shit up. Look at these explosions. Machismo, beat your chest.
Which I would also... Well, I would say that the latter doesn't have to be an epic, but when I think about war epics, they tend to be that second part.
Can go either way. And I love the historical grounded ones because I love the history. I am a history dude. I have read so many horrifying firsthand accounts of people beating trench mates to death to get gas masks, people sinking into horrible, horrible things.
I've always loved the fact that actual people who stormed Normandy, veterans, actually said that the opening Saving Private Ryan was the most accurate depiction of battle they'd ever seen.
Yeah. No. I've read... I am a weird dude. Again, you read enough history, you come across enough terrible things, like the amount of cannibalism in sieges is... Oh, boy. Not going to... So, again, there's that whole one that plays to the weird, cynical, nihilistic part of our brain that's like, yeah, no, this is terrible. And I appreciate that. But I also enjoy the classics of, you know, the 40s and 50s of the big, bombastic... We made so many Normandy invasion movies with John Wayne.
We did?
Well, John Wayne did more Pacific theater, but there's still The Longest Day, Bridge Over the River Kwai, classics of the genre that, you know, they're rooted in World War II history. They are these big epics.
Well, World War II has also always been such fertile ground for stories because of how really, when you start researching
it's
history,
documented.
Yeah, well, there's
it's
that too.
Fucking back again.
Yes, that
also
is very
convenient. Bad guys that no one should ever have any sympathy for.
That's what I was about to say, and Ulrich can say more about this. But from my understanding, when you actually start researching the history of war, the number of times when the level of black and white of good and bad is that clear is so small.
Yeah, like, I'm not letting the Soviets off the hook, but genocide is the insurmountable no. We're not going to talk about anything else. Fucking genocide on a ridiculous scale is happening here.
Yeah, but so it makes it very, very effective as a setting for fiction and nonfiction.
But anyways, when I say I want better, what I talk about is I want this big, bombastic, fun stuff without the guilt that comes from being set in the real world. Like, we did a whole episode talking about what makes Lord of the Rings battles so good and crunchy and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Those are essentially war movies. We're tapping that lizard brain that goes, ooh, I love violence, without the, I don't have to feel bad wondering if little Grugnak is going to be mad that his father didn't make it back from the Battle of Helm's Deep.
Well, you know, it's funny. Yeah, well, because literally when you first talked about, like, war movies, one of the first thoughts I had was, it's not really a war movie, but part of what I love about Captain America, the First Avenger, is how it actually feels like a war epic that takes place over this long span of time, and where we see, like, bits of the battles and the strategies and what, and it, again, it's not really a war movie, but it basically
it's almost there. Like, the fact that we never got a Captain America and his Howling Commandos animated series in all the time the MCU has been a thing feels like, because that is Saturday morning cartoon crack built right in.
I mean, G.I. Joe at that point, but yes.
You get the point, but G.I. Joe, fucking Starship Troopers is that same thing of, well, I can enjoy all the Starship Troopers. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. It might be my favorite movie of all time.
Starship Troopers is fascinating for a whole different set of reasons, though. But yes, I actually wouldn't call Starship Troopers a war movie, but that's...
No, Starship Troopers is an anti-war movie.
Yeah, I would say that Starship Troopers is almost an entity unique unto itself for the type of movie it is. But another
it's fun because it can be interpreted as a war movie if you read no subtext.
Yes, but like one movie that I do not think is on the level of Captain America or Starship Troopers or Lord of the Rings or anything like that, but with what you said, I'm curious how a movie like 300 fits into that. Where
300's a war movie. It's that... I have lost 99.9% of the love I had for 300 just by rewatching it recently and going, oh,
yeah,
it's ugly. It's incredibly ugly.
I have not rewatched
it. Why is it so ugly?
In probably about 12 or 13 years, so I'll take your word for it.
I was cleaning out my DVD collection because like 300 came out the exact right time for me. I was a teenager obsessed with the Spartans. Zack Snyder is a grown man that's obsessed with grown men.
I just thought that
not a knock on him. That's just saying his aesthetic is, he's really into the beefcake aesthetic.
Yeah, and 300 is a bunch of that. It's a bunch of oiled up, super muscly, mostly naked soldier dudes murdering people.
Yeah.
And being bravado. Like, I just only bring it up because, like, I think just, like, 2 days ago, the scene came up on my YouTube recommended of the, Spartans, what is your profession? Like, that whole sequence. Yep. And I was like, this sequence is still awesome. Like, yeah,
there's a lot of good bits in it. It's just the color grading is so ugly.
True. It is kind of oily orange through most of it.
Yeah. Like, this really needs a recolor because everything has this smeared yellow brown bay aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, that kind of falls into it. And that's.
But it seemed relevant to what you were
saying. It's so divorced from the actual history.
That's what I was going to say, is that it's because it's a comic book. Like, he's adapting a comic book with the comic book vibe. It just so happens that comic book is also touching on a real-world event.
Now, where it gets kind of icky is the interpretation of it being Islamophobic or Eastern-phobic, and it's like...
Yeah, when you
maybe?
Actually, Well, when you actually start reading history about the Persians and the Spartans,
we're not going down that one.
I'm just saying
this weird revisionism around the Persians. I do not agree with.
Yeah, I didn't want to go into details, but I'm just saying that, like, when you look at Zoroastrianism, the primary belief system of the Persian Empire,
Zoroastrianism, yeah,
yeah, if you understand it, start even a little bit, it starts changing entirely how you view what the Persian Empire must have been, or what the term King of Kings actually meant. For Xerxes, yeah. Which is different than what the movie portrays it as.
I love that people are reanalyzing that. I just want them to follow all the way through, because what I've seen is this idea of, oh, the Persians were the liberal-minded, you know, free-thinking positives, and the Greeks were the barbarians. I'm like,
it's not
pump the brakes.
It's not black and white.
It's not that simple.
Yeah.
It's not.
Like
it's way more complicated than that.
Yeah, like the movie's wrong to portray the Persians as the slavers and the Greeks as free. It is wrong to do that, but it's not.
This is not a reliable narrator. This is literally the story being told afterwards to pump everybody up, which is why the Persians are depicted as monsters.
Yeah, but my point of bringing it up is that, like, it's a movie that I think is an actual war movie. It is all about a war, and particularly a set of battles. A very specific one. It is extremely stylized. It's all about the style. It's really not realistic at all. It's not trying to be. As you said, it's an unreliable narrator. It's a story being told by a soldier to pump up a bunch of other soldiers before they go do some more killing.
Yep. But a greater, more recent example we talked about recently is the third act of Rogue One is a war movie.
Yes.
And I would kill for a whole Star Wars movie that is just that. Because, again, I get these big, bombastic explosions. I get these cool fights without any of the... It's not grounded in the real world.
Question then. I know when I think about war movies, I can only think of two ones in recent memory that I remember the names of. And I know you don't like one of them, and I don't know how you feel with the other one. So how do Dunkirk and 1912 or whatever that movie that's
1914?
Just... Thank you. How do those two fall into this conversation?
They commit similar but different mistakes.
Go on.
Dunkirk, like a lot of people, like, oh, Dunkirk is this great epic war movie. It's not, because it doesn't really give me the spectacle of the brainless explosion lizard brain, and it's Nolan, so there's no humanity to be attached to, really. You are familiar with the story of Dunkirk, there's not these characters that you experience going through this stuff that you really like, oh, I'm so glad that Johnny made it back to England. It's barely there.
It is funny
Nolan
because
Nolan doesn't know how to shoot people.
Yeah.
That's why there's open, endless beaches everywhere.
Well, it is funny when we talk about the human element, because I also realized that Hacksaw Ridge was not too long ago, and that's entirely about the human element.
I don't want to touch Gibson at all.
That's fair. I just was talking about, like, as a story being about a medic in war.
I've heard it's great. I don't want to touch it because fuck Mel Gibson. He should never, ever, 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 ever work again.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue with that. I didn't see Hacksaw Ridge. I just know that it's a movie that existed.
No, I know everyone just kind of hemmed and hawed over Hacksaw Ridge, and I'm like, you're all fucking cowards.
Anyway, 1914.
1914, again, it tries to have the humanity of focusing on these two guys existing and going outside no man's land, but it's so hyper-focused on them that it's too clean, is how I describe it. Mm-hmm. Is you never really get a sense of how bad the First World War was,
which,
because these guys are outside the trenches so much,
you
never get the sense of the grimy, dirty. They both are trying to be what I said previously, in war is hell and terrible, but they never really show you what it's like to live in the trenches, which is, a lot of people were pissed at All's Quiet on the Western Front, but I felt that All's Quiet on the Western Front really did that. It showed how grimy and wet and miserable and cold the trenches were.
So two things about that. One is, it is funny because I'm not going to claim anything in World War One was worse than the Holocaust, but if we look at the actual soldiers fighting soldiers, World War One was much worse because of chemical warfare.
Some of the most fucked up, like, first-hand accounts I've read come from World War One.
Yeah. And then the other thing I was going to say is, it's funny when you talk about, like, the griminess of it, because again, when I think of like the battle sequence that I like that most conveys the messiness of battle, it's a fantasy sequence. It's the fucking Battle of the Bastards from Game of Thrones.
Yes. And again, that's what I want. I want things that do these big bombastic stuff that I don't have to take in any of the guilt of these are real people, real events. Because one of the criticisms of All's Quiet on the Western Front is people didn't like how big and bombastic and action-packed the finale was, because like, oh no, I shouldn't be enjoying these tanks and flamethrowers and stuff that actually did happen. And it's like, yeah, no, that's your lizard brain giving in.
So, okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, it's less you want quote-unquote better war movies, and more you want more examples of using the techniques and aesthetics of proper war movies onto more fantastical, fictional situations, which they don't get used on very often.
I've accepted I'm not going to get my historical epics. Napoleon fucking shot that one in the grave this year.
How was Napoleon?
Not going to happen. I haven't watched it.
Oh, okay.
I have watched enough people pick it apart for me to know that all my worst fears were confirmed.
Oh, sorry.
From that's not at all how that battle was done to just a small one. Josephine was 15 years older than Napoleon, and they cast a woman almost 20 years his minor.
Oh. Oh.
For the role.
That's a little awkward.
Yeah. Again, just all sorts of... So, I've given up the hopes of a Master and Commander 2. I've given up hopes of Gladiator 2 being good. I've given up hopes of the historical epic making a return. But you know what? People love big, bombastic smash-em-ups. It's why Michael Bay has a career. I just want to be free of the constraints of going and going, yeah, that's not how any of that happened, or I can't enjoy this because the back of my mind is like, those are real people and real consequences.
But I think a key point of what you're saying that I don't want to get lost, because there's plenty of like sci-fi and fantasy big sequence battles, but I think what Ulrich is trying to get at is that most of the time those things are, they're operating... not just capstones. They're also operating with a set of tools that is not the same that are used in war movies, like making them gritty and like in the muck. That's not really
you
a thing. Have,
you could do like, I would kill for some gritty shit, but
again, I'm not saying that's the end all be all, but what it sounds like is you appreciate very specifically how war movies, the good ones, tend to look and feel, and you don't see that being used outside of the genre as much as it could be to good effect.
Yeah, like the last truly great cinematic battle, like checks all the boxes, is probably the Battle of New York for the first Avengers.
If you
want to know what I qualify for that, go back and listen to our Lord of the Rings episode. One sneak peek is it has what Axel perfectly described as the waves breaking on the beach action. When you talked about how Graham McNeil writes action, you described as waves breaking on a beach.
Mm-hmm.
That is how a good battle scene is written for a movie. It's not all at once. It's rising, rising, crash. Rising, rising, crash. Rising, rising, crash to the point of, oh shit, how many more waves will we survive?
I also think that Cinefix's description of pyramid action is one of the best things to use in a battle sequence. Which, if you... I'm not going to sit here and explain that right now. Cinefix has a great video about like their top five battles in movies and TV where they explain it, talking about the Battle of Helm's Deep. Go watch the video. It's fucking great.
Yeah, Helm's Deep is still hands down the best cinematic battle put to screen.
Probably. Yeah.
I mean, I'm hesitant because, like, what about all these historical ones? I'm like, guilt-free-wise, Helm's Deep wins. Because, again, I don't feel bad when the orcs die.
It also depends on what your conditions are, right? Like, because, again...
I want to appease the lizard brain.
Yeah, yeah. If that's what we're going for, definitely. But if you're looking for like what is the best historically accurate one, that's probably still Saving Private Ryan.
I would nominate the end of Master and Commander. But
you know what? That's fair. I can see that too. It's just that the fact that we never have anyone alive that experienced Master and Commander telling us that we have to. But anyway,
it's a different thing. But yeah, it's in that same like the details. Because, yeah, no, the first... And also, The landing at Normandy Beach is terrifying, which it's supposed to be.
Yes.
The end of Master and Commander is bombastic.
It's also meant to be. Yeah, chaotic is the word yes. I definitely would have used.
Oh, it's super chaotic, but it captures that sense.
All right, I think we landed on the thing that Ulrich was really trying to get at, which makes me yep. more than happy. So if you're listening to this and you have thoughts about like what makes a good war movie, how your feelings in the current state of war movies, or anything else we talked about, because we kind of rambled a lot and I don't remember all the directions we went in, tell us about it.
Yeah, and if you have a suggestion for I want better blanks, let us know, because we've got a couple banked. If this is good, we've got some more. I mean, fantasy and comedy immediately jump to mind.
True. Comedy, I might have a lot to say about that one. But
yeah, comedy says this. I want comedy back that doesn't star Kevin Hart or fucking Jack Black. Please. Pretty please.
We'll have this conversation later. Anyway, thank you for listening. Be sure to do all the liking and sharing and subscribing and all those things, because I know I said that with disdain, but just because I always feel like a shill, but at the same time it really does help us, because when this gets spread, the more we'll see it, the more we can grow, the more we can do.
And if you're like, hey, where can I find you that I'm not already listening to? We are mostly everywhere. We are even on podcast sites that don't exist anymore. RIP Stitcher.
Stitcher's gone.
Stitcher's gone. Stitcher died a while ago.
Oh, I haven't been paying attention. So
they were 2023. It was like, oh. And like Google Play became Google Podcasts. And
I listen to all my podcasts. There. Yeah, I listen to all my stuff on Pocket Cast, which we are on Pocket Cast.
Interesting. Yeah.
This has been Axel Wright.
And it's Shield Brother, Lord Commander Ulrich.
Be sure to tune in next time. And as always, stay honorable.